Ian Hill, Deputy Clerk. Joshua Johnson, Business Owner and Developer. Playing shortstop. No, sorry. Jack Munns, Retired Police Sergeant. Marcus Parton, Business Owner. Alex Shea, Housing Finance Executive. Jordan Valenzuela, Business Owner. And Kimberly Vollmers, Mother and Educator. And I also want to let you know that we have these postcards that have been created by VP of Marketing Communications Aaron Hall. On them, there is a QR code. So to get one of these, we do have stacks of them around, and Haley from the chamber will be passing them around if you'd like one of those. She's in the back there. If you scan that, you'll go to a web page that's been created that gives you all of the information that was provided to us by the candidates, so you can get some background information on them. And you can certainly look at that tonight or at your own on your own afterwards. So I appreciate all of the information that was shared, and Aaron for putting that together. So the order that we're going to answer the questions here, we're going to begin with James Crockett, because he was the one that drew the lucky number one. And then we'll move on in sort of a staggered way to Joshua for question number two, and so on. And that's the fairest way we could think to do it. Remember, these questions came to us inspired from the results of a membership survey that we sent out recently. So we hope that you get a sense for what the business community is thinking and concerned about, and that you're going to hear from the candidates what they think about these issues. So with that, we're going to begin, and you can see the timer there on the iPad, and this is for the candidates' information, is that it will be indicated by, I believe, a green line, and the bar will get bigger and bigger as it goes all the way around 360 degrees around that circle, and that will be 2 minutes total, correct? Okay. So the time will begin once I am done answering the question, and anyone who wants me to repeat the question, I'm happy to do that, and your time will not start until after that question has been asked completely. So, ready, James? I'll refer to you all as Mr. or Ms. for the rest of the night, though, okay? Mr. Crockett. You're used to that. According to the Reading Chamber's survey of its membership, citing ongoing challenges of property crimes and repeat offenders, 80% of survey respondents indicated that criminal activity is adversely affecting their business. The Reading Police Department is finally back to staffing levels not seen since before the Great Recession. If times get tight again, how would you keep the cops? You have 2 minutes.
All right, so first off, the city council has done a good job over the last 6 years. I've been watching city council meetings that long, at least. And they have hired more cops, and they've gotten different training programs and stuff started up. So I think that's the way you go. And the hard thing is, a lot of the times, the good cops cost more money, the ones that are more tenured. But I think lateral recruiting, I think selling the area, you know, to recruit, bring people in. We just did an approval for getting a bonus for people that sign on here. But ultimately, I think that it's a value system in the community. If we are on the city council, we're listening to the community. And if we want more cops instead of other amenities, that's what we would have to do in the terms of a recession. Hopefully we won't be there. But a lot of times the solution, if you study economics, isn't necessarily hiring more cops. Sometimes it's getting a new business in and getting people jobs so they're not out committing crimes. So one of the things that I would definitely focus on if I was on the city council is continuing to revitalize our economy. The driving forces of our economy right now are basically people coming here to spend money, whether it's a church or they're going fishing or they're visiting a grandpa or something. We get people to come here and spend money, and that's the biggest thing in our economy. I would like to leverage other things in terms of an available workforce, good conditions, incentives tax-wise, maybe even to get other businesses coming here. As we enlarge the tax base, it will do marvels for us if we do see another downturn, because right now our economy is not super robust. A downturn might actually hurt our economy more than other economies, since it's primarily a travel economy. So the answer to how do we keep more cops in a downturn is to think ahead now and build a robust economy that is not reliant on any one thing. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson, same question.
Yeah, I think that we are in a much better position than we were in 07 when we were surprised by an economic downturn. The fact that we even have this as a question right now is encouraging to me, that as a community we're looking ahead. And I think the key is having enough reserves set aside where we can absorb a little bit of a downturn when we know that we have ebbs and flows as a community. And basic economics tells us that we're going to have those times of recession and those times of growth. And our community, we have to, our leaders have to look ahead for that. But I think also the CERT program is a really great example of a program that it is to me the future of policing in a lot of ways, and if we do that well and we continue to grow that, we can continue to see cost savings because some of our repeat callers or people that take up a lot of our time and our beat officers' time in the field, we can actually start to see some cost savings in our city by doing that differently with social worker and policing. But you know, we have to be proactive about it, and I think that's the key, is looking ahead, putting aside those reserves. When we have good times, we're putting those aside and kind of planning for the future so that we don't have to take a hit to public safety in those times when we need it most.
Thank you. Over to Mr. DeQuisto.
Test one, test. Could you repeat the question again?
Yes. According to the Reading Chamber's survey of its membership, citing ongoing challenges of property crimes and repeat offenders, 80% of survey respondents indicated that criminal activity is adversely affecting their business. The Reading Police Department is finally back to staffing levels not seen since before the Great Recession. If times get tight again, how would you keep the cops?
That's a trick question. One of the things I'm most proud of on City Council is increasing the funding for the police officers. 4 years ago, I ran on that platform on public safety, and the other council members did as well, and we acted in a unified manner to do that. It took a little bit of time because the revenues go up and go down. We did it through COVID. We did it through increased TOT money. The property tax revenue stayed pretty much the same and went up a little bit each year, and the sales tax money went up each year. And we were able to raise the salaries for the police officers. We're able to offer a $40,000 transfer bonus, which got a lot of laterals in. Lateral takes less time to train. You don't have to worry about them washing out of the academy. You know the younger ones are cheaper. So you need the coming in from the bottom up and from the top or from the side over. If you have a jail and if you have consequences and if people get arrested and they know there are going to be consequences, you'll have fewer people that want to stay here and fool around and do bad things, and some will leave. That will take the need for police officers if you have to cut the budget and allow them to do more with fewer people. In addition to that, we have increased our reserves and we have money for capital projects. We've got about a 15% reserve right now, I think, at the close of this year for the budget. And I would take some of that money, but I would not be in favor of cutting salaries for police officers, and I would not be in favor of cutting community service officers. I think that was a mistake when it was done before, and hopefully that won't happen.
Ms. Valenzuela, same question.
All right, so keeping the cops, I took a couple of notes because I didn't want to lose track, but basically, if 80% of the businesses are worried about crime, and we want to keep the cops, I know that we are giving incentives to people from out of our area to come up here, and I've heard that they actually leave because there's not enough opportunity for business solicitation. So it's kind of like this circle that goes around. We need to make sure that the crime is down in order for businesses to function, in order for us to keep everyone here and enjoying our community. But I support funding the police completely and the programs that will advance our education. In addition to partnering with the nonprofits, I think that the mental health program and drug rehab rehab facilities that we have in the area have a lot of helpful opportunity. And so making sure that those nonprofits and the police are funded is going to be imperative.
Thank you. Mr. Munns.
Thank you. Well, as a retired policeman, one of the ways you have to keep people is you have to pay them. When I retired 12 years ago, it is a completely different game today. Everybody wants to defund the police. We don't want to call the police because we don't think they're coming. You know, there is a thing out there that when we don't appreciate what we have, things begin to deteriorate. The, repeat offenders, major issues, the repeat offenders commit about 90% of the crime. So one of the ways we do that is go after repeat offenders. Whether it's caseworkers or detectives, we need more cops. How do we keep them? We pay them more. We'd have to pay. Nobody wants to do that job today because it is so different. They're out there getting attacked verbally, getting the deaths of police officers has gone up way more than it was when I was there. There's just a lot of things that are going on now that didn't happen before. We also have to have economic growth. Our economic growth is really the engine to everything we want to do. More cops, helping with the homeless, mental health issues, alcohol and drug issues, all kinds of things going on like that. We need good planning, and I think we've done a good job of growth. But the key issues are we need to pay them more to keep them, and then we need to have a repeat offender program where we go after the ones who are committing the most crime.
Thank you. Ms. Audette.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming out here tonight. So I think the downturn in 2008 really taught us a lot of things, and we felt the pain of not having officers in our community. We felt the pain on the river trails. We felt the pain in businesses. And so this is an issue that has a long memory. And so I don't think we'd be so soon to get rid of our officers again since we've worked so hard to get them. But one of the ways that within RPD that they're making sure that they are going to be a little bit immune to a quick economic downturn is that they've done a very good job of insulating themselves from any of the federal funding that's necessary for their equipment. We were able to, on our own, make sure that we had things that the federal government couldn't then take away from us and leave gaps in the budget and in our armories and that type of thing. So I do believe that they've been conscientious of how do we actually have growth that's sustainable. We have NPUs. We have different classifications of officers, which is really helping. It won't be the same. It's not just 120 officers. We have NPU. We have park rangers. We have different classifications that will also make it more affordable for us to be able to sustain that and keep them. So I do think we've come a long way. I think that's obviously something that we're bragging about, that we've actually got it to this level. And I think as a community, we've said safety is actually really important. We have to have healthy businesses to thrive. We've been very frugal in saving our money and making sure we spend within our means, and we have money if for some reason we have a downturn. We don't have to sacrifice safety and business in order to continue to run our government. So I would say we've done a great job. I think those types of things help us, and we should continue to think about how we're hiring, those classifications, what we take from the state or from the federal government that actually could possibly hurt us in the future. So I would continue those types of policies.
Thank you. Mr. Parton.
Good evening. One of the things that I pointed out during the campaign is my concern about crime and crime in this area and the economic impact it has on this area. I think so many people that have lived here for a period of time have seen a change. And because of that, we're willing to possibly invest more into what's going to keep us safe in the community. We have a plan now that has $40,000 signing bonuses for police officers. And that's great, but if they're rearresting the same people again and again, and it's a revolving door, that doesn't seem to help. And that's not what the police want either. Every time they go out there and rearrest the same person, they put themselves at risk. So it's more than that. It also, if we do not solve the crime problem, we're keeping people from coming into this area. As employers look to this area as alternatives, as workforce tends to look at this area for bringing their families and growing a safe environment, I think there's more of a willingness of the population that knows we need to invest in this, and we can take advantage of a couple of things. We can take advantage of those areas that are defunding police and show them that we rever the police that are coming to work with us. Also to bring people into our area that it's safe. Just like employees realize now when they look around that they don't need necessarily a interior office to work at. They can work remotely, and employers are realizing that as well. We can attract those people. We have all the natural resources around here to attract if we handle the crime problem. And so we fully invest in it. Number one, we plan for the future with the downturns, but I think we need to understand that that economic growth will come if we resolve that problem. Thank you.
Thank you. And now Ms. Vollmers.
Crowded space and lots of smiling faces. Thank you all for being here tonight. I don't want to repeat, although I do agree with a lot of what's been said so far, but I want to bring a couple of different things that came to mind with your question. For me, living here and using the spaces here, I think of the cleanup that they just did with Noor Pond and the populating the spaces that are vastly unused, I think is helpful, because we tend to shy away from using the spaces with a population that looks unsafe to us with not having enough information and knowledge. So when I go to the library with my children and I've invited other parents to come there and bring their children, they pull in the parking lot and they say they would like to leave now because it doesn't look safe. So some of the things that I think that would be helpful for the community and the police department would be to see something and say something. There's a lot of misunderstanding and a lack of education of what to do and how to be a part of the solutions and not solely think that the police officers are our only solution. We are part of that solution as well. And then I feel that expanding financing for the CERT team so that that intervention can happen and prevent future crimes, potentially change the trajectory of those people's lives and prevent them from doing crime. And let's see, what else did I jot down? The incentive for hiring the police officers, I think, is tremendous, and it's done all throughout the state and other states as well. And it's something that brings people that have a wanting to do the profession and have a passion for it, and they may not even know what Redding, California is. So once we were to able to get them here, because someone may know someone who lives somewhere else, and we bring them here, I think they would be happy to stay and contribute to our community.
Thank you. Mr. Shea.
Thank you guys for coming tonight. I want to honor the existing council. You guys have brought us back to pre-2007-2008 levels in terms of sworn officers, so well done. Thank you very much for serving our community. We have to think, I'm all for getting boosting reserves, but we also have to think long term, because reserves will only last for a while. That's why they're reserves. So what kind of shrewd investments can we make today so that we don't have this bigger problem down the line? The first thing is data analytics. Talked to Chief Shuler last week. He said, and some other folks have echoed it, 5% commit 90% of the crimes. That's low-hanging fruit, guys. Number one, okay? Number two, proactive policing. We're talking park rangers, we're talking CERT team, and a lot of my other fellow candidates have mentioned it already. But if they are in the neighborhood, and the bike teams especially, they're only half staff still, but they are in the neighborhoods, in the parks, that is preventing crime. Yeah, we'll have the reserves to maintain the officers in the future, but we're going to be depleting that at a much slower rate. And finally, again, this is from Chief Shuler last week. He said, if you can get me, now this is, we're dreaming here, right? So just go with me for 1 second. He said, if you can get me 100 units of temporary shelters tomorrow, I can clean the streets off and get 100 people off the streets. His words. And if we as a council can work creatively and get there, I think we can get something done. And we're not going to have an issue in the long term where, hey guys, we're going to have to dip into reserves. What if we don't need reserves? Because we do such a dang good job today. That's what I think.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
Hi everyone. So I'll keep it short. Basically, Yeah, basically you would want to reduce crime in other ways. So walkability, mental health services, a number of ways that have already been talked about, mainly because one of the biggest costs for policing is overtime. So if they have their caseloads and they're being overworked and they're having to put in these extra hours, that is quite a big cost. So that would be my major way for helping to safeguard them through the recession would be finding other means to sort of take that workload basically at a cheaper rate. Also with that, when we do have a surplus in the city budget, sort of putting that away for later when we know there will be a downturn at some point, not just for police, but for the city in general. But that way we can sort of navigate some of those ups and downs in the coming future. Thank you.
Thank you. We're moving on to question number two. And this one, we'll begin with Joshua Johnson on this one. This is not going to come as a surprise to many of us here. Homelessness was identified by 85% of those that responded to our survey as an issue currently affecting business in Reading. Citing specific examples, what approach would you support to make a noticeable difference? Do you favor collaborative projects with the County of Shasta and local nonprofits to help the unsheltered? Or do you think more programs will encourage more unsheltered people to choose to live here, therefore making the problem worse? You have 2 minutes.
I think that we have to look at this in two different ways. We have a stick and a carrot, and the stick that we need is the correctional backbone, so that it encourages people to get the help that they need. But I do think that while we're waiting on that, where we need more beds, we need programming for people that are within the correctional system to reduce recidivism and all those things, we're all in favor of that. And we believe the city of Reading needs to be at the table to collaborate with the county in that direction. There are things that we can do now that can help. And I would be in favor of the city partnering with community partners who would provide for what I would consider not shelter first or necessarily housing first, but housing that is tied to programming that would get them towards help and get them towards health. This is a health problem. We have open air drug scenes. That is a majority of what we see on our streets in the state of California and up and down the West Coast. And we have untreated mental health. And this is something that is not foreign to just novel to Reading. This happens everywhere in our state. And I think that we have to take a proactive approach, and we have to work with our community partners, because not all of this is a government solution. Some of this is a community solution, and some of this is things that you and I can do as volunteers to get be boots on the ground in our community. And I think it's going to take an approach from all three of those spheres in order to see a real change in our city.
Thank you. So moving over to Mr. DeQuisto.
So when I ran 4 years ago, I said I hate the word homeless, because it conjures up so many different thoughts and ideas in everybody's head. You can be homeless because you just got fired from your job and you can't make your rent payment the first of the next month, and you know you're going to be homeless. That's one end of the spectrum, and that person needs help. You can be homeless because you choose to live in Henderson Open Space for 10 years because it's a nice spot on the river and you can do whatever the hell you want to go do down there and nobody's going to bother you. That's a different kind of homeless person, and you can violate the laws. So the question is, how do you solve the problem? There is no one solution, one size fits all. There's many sizes and many solutions. The city council just recently did a program where we heard about all the different county agencies and the different homeless solutions and programs they have, and many of them overlap. And we directed the city manager to meet, and I think he has met at least once with his counterparts from the county, to talk about that and see what we can do as a group and as a team to try to help solve that problem. One of the things that I had suggested as part of that was a discussion about the jail, because I believe the jail is part of the issue too. There are homeless people that don't want to play by the rules. They don't want to do what's right. It's the 5% that they was talking about that cause all the problems, and those people need to be put away and get off the street. You get them off the street, that's a good chunk of the problem. You like to think of the homeless problem as three blind men in a room with an elephant. And you ask each one, touch the elephant, what do you see? So one man touches the tusks and said, I feel something hard and brittle. One man touches the tail and says, I feel something swishing and moving around. One man touches the ear and says, I feel a big floppy thing. One man touches a leg and says, I feel a big trunk. And that's the nature of the problem. It's not answerable or solvable in one solution. It's got to take a community, and it's got to take a group effort to do it. Frankly, if you look at the funding, the city doesn't have funding, substantial funding to do it. It's state funding that goes down to the county. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Valenzuela.
Well, I touched on a little bit of this before, but I definitely believe that we need to be taking into consideration the nonprofits and funding the mental health programs as well as drug rehabilitation programs. In addition to that, I want to be able to communicate with the county really well because they are working on a jail that's going to make sure there's not a revolving door, and I think that communication with the county is going to be really important to establish. And so with temporary and affordable housing, I think that there's going to be a nice mixture of the two. We want people off the streets, but we don't just want temporary. We want long-term solutions. So investing in affordable housing, I think, combined with mental health drug rehab programs, is going to eventually solve the homelessness issue. So that being said, I am all for working with the nonprofits.
Thank you.
Did you repeat the question?
Yes, absolutely, Mr. Munns. Homelessness.
Call me Jack.
Oh, I've got to keep it consistent. Outside of this, homelessness was identified by 85% of those that responded to our survey as an issue currently affecting business in Reading. Citing specific examples, what approach would you support to make a noticeable difference? Do you favor collaborative projects with the County of Shasta and local nonprofits to help the unsheltered? Or do you think more programs will encourage more unsheltered people to choose to live here, therefore making the problem worse?
Yes and yes. I am definitely for collaborative programs. The program I ran in Reno as a police officer was called Kids Corner. It was geared toward child abuse and neglect among the homeless. What we did was we took the services to them. Okay, what do you need? Oh, you don't know how to fill about the paperwork for your WIC money. Okay, well, we'll help you with that. Oh, you don't know how to go access it? Okay, we'll take you down there, show you how, introduce you, and walk you through all of these steps. We had a great partnership of the Reno Police, Sparks Police, Washoe County Sheriff's Office, Community Health Nurse, and Social Services, and then St. Mary's provided a big 53. I mean, we started with just two or three of us. By the time we were over, we had a staff of 15 helping us. And we helped save many lives, I think, and even a lot of people told us so. But the issue that we're currently having with the homeless is beds. I was told there's 541 homeless, and we're short beds. With the case that came out of Boise, if there's not enough beds, the beds they have on the sidewalk is their bed, and you can't move them from that place. And the judge from was it Chico that expanded that thing? We can't move them for minor little infractions as well. So that is their bed. Once we have enough beds, then we can get them help and move them along where they need to be. And in that case, I think we can refer them more to services, help them with the issues they have. So I'm definitely in favor of collaborative. I don't think, you know, they say if you build it, they will come. But I also think we're going to be helping a lot more people get in where they need to be, to become fully housed, start small, and then build on what we have, the success we have.
Thank you. Ms. Audette.
I think this is probably the most well-informed community about our homeless situation, about what our jail space looks like. I've never known more people that have more facts. But so I'm not going to go into everything, but I will tell you this. From the moment that I got involved with Leadership Reading, we ask our people that apply every year, what's the biggest problem? They say homelessness. When you, every campaign that I've worked on for the last 7 years, what's the biggest issue? It's homelessness. So for me, I wanted to go see what this actually is. So I've been doing ride-alongs with our crisis intervention response team. I've done 3 ride-alongs with the fire department. I've been down to Chico to actually talk to their public works director to talk about that lawsuit that happened there, what worked, what didn't work. I went to the operators of the pallet shelter down there to look at the shelters, to talk to the people that are living in them, to figure out what's working for them, what's not working for them. So this issue is obviously the most important thing that's happening. Now, it's also created by the government. So the state of California with Prop 4757 and AB 109 completely changed how we punish crime here. And so there's things that feel out of our reach to fix. However, the state is also now offering some funding for some solutions to the problem that they created. They haven't fixed punishment, if you know, and honestly, what we now have on the streets are different. It's not just criminals. We have the mentally ill. We have those that are addicted. So we have a community here that we all don't want to see them just suffer. We want them to get better. We want them to have jobs. We want all the things that we would want for our own kids. It's just that it's not so simple. They have a mind of their own. They're going to do what they want to do. So as I've gone into the camps, I've been talking. What are you looking for? When the crisis intervention response team is making contacts, when the police are saying we need a place to put them, we need a home for them as a first step, even if housing first doesn't afford you a caseworker, I feel like our nonprofits in the community actually want to step into that place. So we have lots of options here. There are many nonprofits that are stepping in to get hotels, to start doing services for them and saying, we'll step into the gap of government.
Thank you. Mr. Parton.
Thank you. As to the collaborative efforts, definitely. You know, we have to step in and continue to strive to meet that need of homeless. But there's really 2 different fractions for that. And the best example that I've seen of late is the Mer Pond open space, where we have somewhat like 25 different agencies here, that service agencies that help our community. And do we need to add more? And so the second answer, or the second answer to the second question, would be, I don't think we need more programs. We just need to implement solutions. Some of those solutions would include providing some housing for those who want it. Some don't want it. And getting back the Mer Pond open space, where there was weeks of notice and agencies went out to meet with these people who were encamped in that area for a long period of time and say, let us help you transition. Some of them didn't want to, and at least, as you know, we've cleaned up that space, but they've moved to adjacent spaces now. It hasn't solved the problem, and so because they didn't want help. So for those that want and need help, we have to make strides and efforts, and we have to allocate resources in order to do that. We're paying for it one way or another. For those that disobey our laws, that violate property rights, we have to have some consequences for those people. And if that helps them transition a different way, then that's good. The impact to our area, with over 3,000 hotel rooms in the area, on tourism alone is devastating, as people want to pass through town instead of staying town. You know, we have to feel safe in our community. And the way to do that is to invest both in the solution for those people that need housing and for those people that to take advantage of the system. And we've seen it with that 100 tons of garbage taken out of that area after they were asked to vacate that we've paid for as taxpayers.
Thank you. And now Ms. Vollmers.
I think this issue is the most paradoxical issue for everyone because it feels so personal, and it feels like when you're living here that it's so catastrophic, especially if you compare it to the past. But when you travel places, it's something that is statewide. So I think that creativity can come through looking at things from a point of view that we don't think it's those people and then us that are affected, because homeless people are counted in the sense of someone who is couch surfing, someone who is has lost their job or doesn't have a permanent place to live. And so the impact on that, I think that sometimes we can enforce and allocate resources and have connections and education of what resources are available, because like Tanessa did mention, there are a lot of resources here. I think that usually a lot of people right before they're going to be homeless don't know what their resources are and what the possibilities are to change their life and potentially their family's life. So affordable housing is something that can prevent people from being on the street, and then I think that we cannot assume that homelessness will ever end. It's not something that we even should put into our mind that it's something that we can solve, because it is a choice that some people make to connect people to resources, to educate them of what is available here, and then to enforce when people are committing crimes, because not everyone who is on the street is drug addicted. Not everyone who is on the street is a drug addict. And some people who are in a homeless situation, they go into those communities and they feel belonging. So continuing to advocate for the CERT team to intervene and educate them and connect them so that they create those new communities for themselves outside of living on the streets, I think. And the city can absolutely do that. There are ways that we can use state funding, and that is only through collaboration with nonprofits that are here, because they then can get those grant monies and state funding.
Thank you. Mr. Shea.
I'm going to tell you guys a story. It starts off with someone that's here, boots on the ground. He's in the homeless camps day in and day out. He tells a story about a woman who's disabled. She has an EBT card. She's homeless. She looks at her, what she thinks is her, who she thinks is her friend. She says, "Hey, can you help me out? Go to the store for me. I can't walk." He takes it, and he runs away with it. It's the truth that they are both homeless, but it's not the whole truth. She needs a different set of services, and he probably needs to go to jail. Let's be real. So what's my point here? If we don't have data, if we can't properly segment who is out there, then we are misapplying the solutions to different groups. So what I'm looking at here is short-term shelters and housing, okay? Not permanent, and in my opinion, not affordable housing. We need short-term shelters that actually provide a space for our cops to have teeth, to be able to enforce and say, hey, get out of NERPON. You can't go here, but we have plenty of opportunities and solutions and services that we can attach and assist you and help you out with. The best part is, there are fantastic nonprofits. I want to highlight one. I'll highlight two. FaithWorks. They have transitional housing, 9 months long, for folks that just get out of jail. Not many people are going to hire them, but they actually provide them with the services and temporary housing to get them into permanent housing. The best part is 87% success rate. Problem is they only have 9 beds. That's effective. Let's help expand that. Next one, in terms of data analytics, Good News Rescue Mission. When I sat down with Jonathan Anderson, first thing he did was pull out his iPad, and he started flicking through photos. I'm going, what are you doing? That's Jason. He's been on the streets for 3 years. That's Jenny. She's been on the streets for 8 years. We need that.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
So first off, basically, as people have reiterated here, homeless people and the unhoused, they're not a monolith. There's no one way to treat them or act towards them or anything like that. They have varied needs, just like us. And also, I just want to say personally, many of us are probably closer to being homeless than we realize, rather than being a millionaire or billionaire. So this is definitely personal for me. But then working on collaborative programs, asking people who are already working with these people, what is effective? As the city, we do have resources that we can bring to bear, but we really want to ask people what is actually effective, what's worth our time, money, and other resources, just to see what's effective. And as to if more people would come, that doesn't mean we shouldn't try for those who are already here, because honestly, helping them helps us. And even from an economic standpoint, helping them is cheaper than continually having the police go after them and things like that. So I would be very much in favor of working with programs that are already doing what they're doing. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Crockett.
So I have a question. What are you doing to address homelessness around you? One of the best things I've ever heard Mr. DeCristo say down there is homelessness is a community problem and it requires a community solution. Watching the council meetings, I have a problem because community members are bringing solutions and they're being shot down. There was a lady that had a mobile showering unit, fully funded. Everything was taken care of. She just needed permits to do it and take it around. Homeless advocates came down. Homeless people came down. People that studied homeless said, this is the move in the right direction. But there's people complain because I don't want people that are homeless showering within, you know, 500 feet of my business. If you want to address homelessness, you are going to have to get together as a community and do it, which means you are going to have to do it. Our current mayor has done a phenomenal job. Our city council has a ton of services. It almost makes me feel uncomfortable how much the government is involved here because the government cannot fix the problem. You can fix the problem. We can fix the problem. But when we have people that bring up things like showering, another example is there's a church that has some small short-term housing, and it was a 3-2 split vote. If I'm thinking about something really cool to help address the homelessness in this area, and I'm worried the city council is not going to let it go through, I might not put my blood, sweat, and tears into that. So it's a cultural thing that we have to address. And whoever is going to be up here, whoever you vote for, needs to be able to look at that and say, yes, let's let the community get involved. It's not just a city council thing. It's not a government thing. It's a community thing. So until we get skin in the game, I mean, we can say all the nice things and mental hospital, more cops, like all the nuanced things that you're hearing everybody say, it won't fix the problem if it's all government run and organized. I teach students that are homeless, kids that are struggling to get through school, living out of their car. It takes human connection. It takes someone knowing that they care about them. It takes someone reaching out. And if you're not willing to do that, if our community is not willing to do that, it doesn't matter all if we implement all the things and we have unlimited money, it's still going to be a problem. It really requires us and our heart and our attitude towards them.
Thank you. We're now moving to question number 3, and it will be Mr. DeCristo that begins this round, let's say. So here we go. We have heard many times that Reading's large geographic footprint makes it challenging from a city budget standpoint to keep up with street maintenance and other infrastructure needs. When you travel around Reading, what do you see under the responsibility of the city that needs maintenance? How would you prioritize what should be maintained? How would you fund it? You have two minutes.
That's all?
I know, it's like a 5-question, 1-question, okay?
So let's talk about streets, because everybody drives on them, everybody uses them, everybody drives through the potholes, everybody goes around the construction. The street funding for Reading rely on federal money from the gas tax, and they try to make it worse. One of the things that I had asked for was just a little bit of funding for Airport Road from some of the ARPA money that we got, because they've got federal funding that's redone the parking lot and the loop around the airport. And we've got many, many planes that come in here now, lots of people that come into town, and it's one of the gateways to the city. And I said, why can't we pave Airport Road up either out through Knighton Road to the freeway and or up to 44 so that when they come in the city and they look at it, they get a good first impression. And unfortunately, there wasn't enough, there weren't 3 votes from the council to go and do that. So it's a tough problem. And we asked Mr. Rockham, we said, what's the solution? And he said, honestly, there isn't one. We need more money. We just don't have it. We spent, and it's part of the difficulty of being on council. We have to prioritize. We talked earlier about, well, what do you do if you have to cut the police or cut the fire? Well, police and fire are more important than roads, in my opinion. They're all important, but they're more important. So you have to make those choices. And we don't have an unlimited money tree in the backyard, which I wish we did. We just need to keep a strong economy to do the best we can. But I think the roads are the biggest thing. I think they're the most underlooked area of improvement that we can make.
Thank you. Ms. Valenzuela.
So how to fund the infrastructure and our parks and everything. It's definitely an important issue for me because I go around the parks all the time, being born and raised here, and I have a local business. Basically, I believe in no tax increases on the residents, but if we support and make sure that our local businesses are successful, we can get more support in tax revenue that way and be able to fund the police, pave the streets, and I know the utilities have this amazing technology that coordinates what kind of importance the streets need to be paved and everything. So they are advancing their technologies in that way. And park cleanup, I believe that the ARPA funds that they've been talked about to distribute this way and that way, either the riverfront or park cleanup or local businesses. So there's been a couple of different ideas, and I definitely am for park cleanup because I think it will reduce the homeless population in those areas. And with all of the facilities, the programs that we have a place to put them. So I think that local business support will be our solution for receiving funding as well as other grant opportunities from the government. I did want to clarify that I did not say that we would solve the people, but we would solve the homeless issue. So that being said, Alex said it very well when he said cops can do their job correctly because of the program we have supported and everything. So,
yeah. Thank you. Mr. Munns.
Thank you. You know, if gas tax from California and from the feds help us with our infrastructure should be fabulous. takes me $70-$80 to fill up my car, you know. But on a lighter note, 60% to 85% of our businesses that move or close is due to crime. It's not quite that strong in Reading, but we are moving that direction if we don't get a handle on crime and homelessness. We can't have economic growth if our businesses are leaving and not coming because of crime and homelessness. We got to take control of that. I think we have, according to Shuler, we have 121 cops when I think there's 7 or 8 or 9 in the academy. I believe we need more. And I'm going to be asking for about 5 more cops a year to help with that. And, you know, we all drive on these roads, and they're absolutely horrible. So I would put roads right at the top of the list when these alleged taxes that we're supposed to get come in. So thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Audette.
So government obviously is instituted for the protection of people and property, but next to that is infrastructure. And so our roads, our parks, the things that we rely on that we don't even think about, we just expect them to be clean. We expect them to be maintained. We expect that we're not going to damage our car by driving on the roads is not as sexy as having a lot of police officers. But because we've gotten ourselves to a position where we're staffed the way that we should be, it is important that we start prioritizing and putting on the table that we're going to take care of our roads. And obviously we can't take care of it all at once, but we can incrementally begin to do that. Same with our parks. It's a crying shame what's happened at Big League Dreams and the lack of maintenance that's happening there. And we could be a regional center for, which we are in many ways. We have lots of tournaments there, but we could actually be doing more. The opportunities that are happening in many of our parks and the community wanting to be involved, I think it's important that we capitalize on those opportunities. So when it comes to prioritizing our infrastructure, it's going to have to happen incrementally. We're going to have to put it as a priority. I think it's never going to be the easy sell that police and fire are, but it is necessary. And so part of having a good reserve or part of having a good, healthy budget is that we make tough decisions that are good for us in the long run. And so I think we can do it. I think we will do it. I think we've said that it's important. We expect it. And so you can count on us to do that.
Thank you. Mr. Martin.
Thank you. 61 square miles to maintain is a lot. And maybe we were too aggressive as a town in making the boundaries that big. But we're there, and we have to take care of it. We need to create an environment where economic development is encouraged that will help solve those problems. We need to bring us up instead of maintaining the status quo. I know that for years we've been compared to other market areas, and we've seen them grow, but Reading stays somewhat stagnant. You have to wonder why, with all the natural beauty we have around, our own electric utility that's a marvel. So we need to create an environment that can grow, and that goes back to the crime issue. It goes back to the crime issue. Look at the empty space that we have around, the empty retail space that's available. What if we're generating tax dollars with that? What can we do to make our city safer that's going to attract people and tourists to not only come here, but come here and stay? Come here and make longer stays, spend their money here, and help our community grow. And so we have a problem to fix it, but I think if we look to prioritization as we look to solve the crime issue, that will help to solve our infrastructure issues and increase tax base.
Thank you. Ms. Walmers.
Traffic and infrastructure for roads is something kind of comical in my family because my husband has worked in traffic for the last 12 years throughout the entire state. And so sometimes when I hear that people complain about roads here, I'm like, try traveling. Well, the routes that I take anyways, I know that it can be frustrating, but you should see the frustration coming out of people when the work is being done. So there's a flip side in my mind because we want the work done, but then, you know, you see the cones go down and you're like, oh my gosh, what, why in my neighborhood? Why in my city? I do think that we do and have been doing and increased the job that we've been doing as a city to promote tourism, and that tremendously helps, obviously, if we're using gas tax to do the road. So I would like to see maybe the next year plan and be a part of that plan, because allocating money for roads and for infrastructure for those types of things while we're drawing tourism, they need to go hand in hand. We can't draw people here and then have them never return. And recently I did listen to your podcast, Jake, of the woman who runs, what is it called, for the Civic Center.
Advanced Reading.
Advanced Reading, yes. I listened to that podcast, and I loved the information that she was giving was about the visitation that we have here that expands beyond the Civic. So the people who come to the Civic Center and how they go out and spend money elsewhere. So all the things that we have here, nature included, we don't even have to spend money. We live in it. We live in the reason to come here, the nature around us, and the money that they spend. So it's, I think, supporting that in an incremental way that sustainable would be something that I would love to be a part of.
Thank you. And the Commerce Connection podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. So with that, Mr. Shea.
Only $5 per download. Go straight to the Chamber of Commerce. Not true. False. Am I using my time for that? I guess I am. I would look at this in three ways, kind of a waterfall effect. So the question was, what do we prioritize? How do we maintain? The first thing is, what do we have to do? Okay, what's a safety issue? I talked to the airports manager, and this is about 8 months ago. This is before the federal grant came in. He said, we got to fix our runway. Because this is a binary outcome. Either the plane lands or the plane doesn't land. If the plane doesn't land, that's not a good outcome. So what are those situations in our city that we can tackle that we have no option, we need to spend that money? The second way to, let's say the tier would be, what's the biggest bang for the buck? And what that means is, all right, our infrastructure grade for this segment of the road is a 30%. And I think from our public works director, that is Reading's grade. It's pretty low. Which areas can we target, spend $1 million, just throwing out numbers, and get push out deferred maintenance farther, probably 6-7 years out, and make that calculation? Let's make informed decisions that actually can save the city money long-term, because if a city's running effectively, we're always deferring maintenance, the point, but we're always deferring maintenance. Number three, sustainability. Okay. What if we dig more wells in South Reading, because that's where aquifer reservoirs are? Maybe that helps cut costs on water, because we have to think big picture. It's not just infrastructure with roads. It's sewage. It's our aquifers as well. And, about
15% of our general fund budget right now goes towards infrastructure. That's number three. Number one and number two, police and fire. And so it would be worth exploring, hey, what if we, in the short